for sharing about what God is up to in our church. And there's lots going on, obviously. And well, today we're continuing in Colossians. And like Soyental said, my name is Brandon. I'm one of the English pastors here, and Pastor Tim's here as well. And he got to preach at CMC today. I keep telling people that. I don't know why. It just keeps rolling off my tongue. I'm just excited that he was able to participate in the Cantonese service this morning earlier as well. I know I've done that a couple times now, and in the Mandarin. And it's just fun that we get to be a part of each other's lives as one church, as we did with our Chinese New Year celebration. And again, I want to thank everyone who was involved in the Chinese New Year celebration in helping out. That was a lot of work and phenomenal time. So especially for the Mandarin congregation, if you see any of those members, thank them. Really, they took a large role in that for that week. So big thank you to each one of those. My question for us this morning to get us going is this, is how do you find out who someone is? Like, you hear about somebody, so what do? I know what you do exactly. Right, you go on your phone, you look up on social media, you type in Sheila, right? And you're trying to figure out, who is this person, right? I'm going to find out who they are. So what we do, maybe in the olden days, maybe you looked it up in the phone book, right? Oh man, this name, I'm going to look them up. Okay, yeah, it says they're from this area, right? Did you ever do that? No, nobody did that, right? But I did as a kid. I looked them up. You'd creep people. Even growing up, there was this local convenience store, right? I grew up in the countryside. Maybe you did this in the city too, where you just go and hang out at the local store. And literally, that's where the old men would go and drink coffee in the morning, smoke their cigarettes, and they would hang out and talk about everybody, I guess. And so you'd get to know who people were just by going there, right? You'd creep them out. Now it's easy. No one has to know you're even doing it. You just search them. You look them up. You hear of a friend of a friend? Social media, right? You're about to hire somebody, social media, right? Or you're about to work for somebody, yeah, social media, right? Your sister started dating somebody, social media, right? Of course. Your kid starts dating. I don't even want to think about that, right? But maybe for some of you, that's your life. Social media, look them up. I promise you, it's worth it. Friends trying to set you up, okay? Good, also, social media, right? So where do we look Jesus up? How do we find out who he is, right? I think in Colossians today, as we jump into this passage in chapter 1, it really is an amazing bio of who Jesus is. That we can get to know who he is in a far greater way. And really it does, like Yentl was experiencing in worship and like Ernest was leading us, leads us in awe. And that would be my heart today. As we jump into Colossians chapter 1 yet again, we're still in Colossians chapter 1, that we would find ourselves in awe of who Jesus is. So, from Tim last time, we saw that Jesus takes us, God takes us from the dominion of darkness and into the dominion of his beloved Son, it said. So the question is today, and for the passage in chapter 1, who is the Son? Well, let's look him up here today. In chapter 1. Sorry, there's his bio. I want to give you three things today in his bio, in his social bio that I made for us. It's these three things. His perfect image, he's the firstborn, and his work as a reconciler. It almost ends up being more of a resume. I admit my analogy kind of broke down a little bit. But anyway, these are the three things in our passage today. His perfect image. I want to look at it through this passage. Keep your eyes open. That he's the firstborn. What does that mean? That he's like just the firstborn of like my children, you know, that kind of thing. Is he... What's his work? His work as a reconciler. So let's look at this passage here today. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of the cross. And you, who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he is now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death, in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him. If indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister. This is the word of the Lord. Well, I want to look at these three bio points today. And the first one I said was this, is he is the image. What do we mean by image? Well, we don't actually mean like a marketing image or maybe the image you're trying to conjure up on TikTok or Instagram, whatever it might be. It's not that type of sense, but more the sense that he's the exact representation. He's the exact representation of God. That's who Jesus is. Like if your Facebook or Instagram was the exact representation of you, that's kind of what Jesus would be. Like kind of maybe like the queen's face on a coin for us, or that is not for the coin, it's not necessarily the queen, but it is the queen's. But for Jesus, he is the human form of God, both God and man. He is the image. None of these explanations really alone get what the image is, but he is the image of the invisible God. God being visible, especially for Israel and for us, is a game changer. It's a game changer. Before then, he wasn't really seen by anybody. There was a select few who Jesus or God would come down to in a bit of a human-like form, whether it be Moses, right, where he came as a friend, or Joshua on the battlefield. Maybe there was an instance or two where it was God's image of some sort that came and visited man. But this is a game changer when Jesus came, took off the form of God, and became man. For Israel, it was the wait for God was to come and save them was waning on them. Many had turned away and didn't really believe it anymore. But when some finally saw Jesus, I can only imagine the relief that would have been on their faces and the weight that would have lifted from their souls. God had finally come to rescue them. He's the image of the invisible. The God who seemed far off was now with them. Was with them. In conversation with Philip, Jesus was explaining that he is the way, the truth, and the life. Maybe you're familiar with that passage in John chapter 14. But in the midst of that conversation, he says that so that they would know who he was, that he was in fact God. That they would know even the Father. So Philip says, well, show us the Father so that we can know him. And Jesus in this verse in John 14, 9 then says, don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been among you for so long, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show me the Father? Jesus is the image of the invisible God. God became seen in Jesus, and now, today, is still real. We have him within his writings that we have in this text called the Bible. We have him in his spirit who comes to us and makes this word alive and is very real and very present, even in this room today. He is the image of the invisible. But what's our experience of this? We don't always feel this, do we? God is removed from so many of our lives. And it's easy when you begin to walk down the street and you hear conversations or you turn on the news or you see people talking on social media. It doesn't seem like God is very present, does it? Maybe even within your own life. It doesn't seem like God is very present at times. Now, to be fair, he can feel distant at times. I'm not going to lie to you. He can feel distant. At times, we live our lives and we ask, where is he? When death comes or tragedy, where is he? Or maybe you're simply bored and you're growing numb to life, or you're overworked and you're just wondering, where is he? It's a fair question that you can bring to God. Where is he? My ears may seem deaf to his voice, my eyes blind to his face, my soul numb to his presence. Maybe you've never experienced his presence before. This passage is really, really important. Here's the promise in these verses. God is visible. He's visible to us through his presence. Maybe not through our human eyes, but the eyes of our soul, our inner being. We can know him today and get to know him on a deep level, deeper than you've ever even known today, even if you've been a Christian all of your life. He wants to be known even more. He can be seen even more today. He doesn't simply leave us to figure it out through some words in an ancient text, but reveals himself through the word and his presence. He is the God who reveals. That's what it means, that he is the image of the invisible God. Well, what's his second bio point here today? The second one is that he's the firstborn. What does this mean, right? Is this child ordering, right? Well, technically kind of he is, but that's not really what it's talking about as you get into the context. From context, it simply means that he is the first of everything. The first of everything. Another definition that I was reading was this one on the screen that I think was really helpful. Is preceding all others in time, in space, or degree. Preceding all others in time, in space, or degree. So he's the firstborn, not necessarily of ordering of his siblings, but of the world. The firstborn means he's overall. Well, in what way? This is where our passage goes. So let's look at his bio. Let's see what qualifies him. If you were to get a resume from Jesus, right? What qualifies him to be the firstborn? What does he have on his resume here today? And there's these few things that I found that I want to bring up. These four things from our passage here today. If you have it in front of you, that's helpful. The first one is this. It says that he created all things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. Through him and for him. This is important, this word through him, because it means he was actually there at the beginning. That he wasn't a created being, but at the beginning, he created all things. He was with the Father in the beginning. Through him, through his power. Some will even say that at the beginning, when it says, when God spoke, things were created. And who do we know Jesus to be? In John, we know him to be the Word. From John chapter 1. He was in the beginning and everything was created through him. That qualifies him to be the firstborn, meaning over everything. But I love it. It wasn't enough that everything was made through him. The passage said everything was made for him. For him. Means it was purposed for him. It belongs to him. It was made for him. Have you ever felt like some sort of void in your life, right? I'm not sure, maybe it's like midnight and you're just wondering the purpose of life, right? Have you ever had those moments? Maybe for you it's like 10 a.m. in the morning, I don't know, but mine seemed to happen at night. Or I sense that void in my being and I think it's because of this. I believe it's because of this, because we're made for him. We're purposed for him. That makes him the firstborn over all creation. Through him and for him. Well, number two, he holds everything together. I love that in this passage. That hit me particularly hard, or good in a hard way, like this time around exploring this passage, that he holds everything together. I'm just going to say it again. Let you sit with it. Jesus holds everything together. You look up into the stars, he holds everything together. The sun in the sky, the trees in the forest, our fields, our mountains. He holds everything together. All the way down to our lives. That maybe for some of you feel so insignificant at times. But guess what? He holds everything together. And you are a part of everything. It's the present tense here. Right? All things were created in the past through him and for him, but he holds everything together. This is today. This is for us. The firstborn, he raised from the dead. This is a pretty good one, right? This qualifies anybody to be like over somebody else. Is he raised from the dead? Something else is going on here. Though not maybe the temporally first, even Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, so Jesus wasn't first in that sense, but first of its kind in a very different way than even Lazarus was raised from the dead, if you know that story. Jesus was raised from the dead into this new body and resurrected into a new sense of what it will be for us even to be human in the last days and our resurrection from the dead. That's what it means, that he's firstborn among the dead, that he rose from the dead into this new form that we get to be a part of. So that qualifies him as well to be firstborn, that we will then one day live in the fullness of his resurrection because he paved the way for us. And fourthly, what qualifies him to be the firstborn is the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in him. The fullness of God was pleased to dwell in him. Everything you discover and know about God is in Jesus. Everything we can discover and know about God is only through Jesus. Not that Jesus wasn't God when he and then became God. That's not what this passage is saying. It's saying maybe something like in Philippians 2. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but it says he took off the form of God and became like us. Like us. And so God's fullness was pleased to dwell with the Son. Fully God and fully man. This unique, unique being. The fullness of God is in him. I think that makes him worthy to be called the firstborn overall. We see that the Father was pleased with him in his baptism, if you want to read that, in Matthew 4, or in Matthew 17. They both are fairly similar language where the Father speaks to the Son in this unique relationship they have and says, "This is my Son with whom I'm well pleased." And so listen to him was kind of the insinuating thing after that. He's pleased with the Son. So if God is fully in this man named Jesus, yes, he's worthy to be the firstborn. So, first bio point, he's the image of the invisible God. Second, he is the firstborn over all creation. And lastly, let's look at his work then, since we're looking at his resume as the reconciler. What is the reconciler? Well, it says he raised from the dead. He is the firstborn from among the dead. And so all of this, let me read this part a little bit. All things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things, and in him all things hold together, and he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. 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 Before I get to reconciler, let's look at this word preeminent for a second. It simply means that he's first overall. That he's first overall. We could ask so many questions of what does it mean to be a Christian? Maybe you've come today asking that question. What does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be a Christian with when it looks at, we look at politics, when we look at morality, when we look at laws and manners and behaviors? What does it mean to be a Christian in those things? You know, we could look at, maybe it means an ecstatic experience. Maybe I need to check off some check boxes of this is what it looks like to follow Jesus. But when I look at this passage, I wonder if the question is more of this. Am I making him first, or am I making him preeminent in my life? Like, don't get me wrong, he is preeminent. That's what this passage is saying. He is first. He is supreme. But do I align myself up with him or not? I think that's what this passage comes to in our lives personally, is we need to ask that question. In all of these things in my life, am I lining myself up with him? The positive side of that is this. I can come to Jesus for absolutely anything in my life. He's actually inviting me. He's inviting us in. He wants to be asked. He wants to be involved in our lives. And we know he's qualified. And he wants to be involved in our lives. You know, we could say, ask that question again. What does Christianity say about this topic or that topic? What does it say about COVID? What does it say about sex and drugs and alcohol and marriage? And we search the scriptures for these things, which is healthy and good, but I don't know if that is the primary question and the first question that we should be asking. I think the first one is this. Do I line myself up with Jesus? Is he preeminent in my life? Then all these things begin to line up with him. Then we learn what it is to follow him. What about in the church? I've talked a lot about personally, but the passage here is specific. Did you hear it? That he is the head of the church. It calls us out. Paul is calling us out here. Very specifically, because the church is his bride. He loves the church. But he calls him, again, the head or the preeminent or the firstborn of the church. What does it mean? Again, we must align ourselves. Everything we do, right, we do in ministry as we make disciples, as we do programs, whatever we do needs to be constantly aligned with him. We need to ask the question, is he preeminent in our church? That really is the goal as we come, EMC Council, your volunteer leaders who met together on Saturday, that really is our question as we come time and time again, is what's God doing and how can we be on board with what he's doing? That's what we're doing here. We can even go to the most extreme and talk about death and life, the ultimate. Well, that's where the passage goes, of course. And we see that Jesus conquered death, not only when he raised Lazarus and declared he is the resurrection and the life, but ultimately after on the cross, when he died and was raised again, which brings us then to his work, this third bio point. In verse 20, it says this, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. Of course, this makes him preeminent as well, that he did this great work for us. To reconcile to himself all things, it says. The cross does this work as he sheds his blood. But this word reconcile here is really, really important. And as I thought about it, I was thinking, well, what does reconcile really mean at its base? And I think it was this is what came to mind, is it means there used to be some sort of good relationship with God and man. Of course, you can go back to Genesis 1 and read a bit about that. But there used to be some good relationship that Jesus says is worthy to be restored. That if everything was made through him and for him, he wants to bring it back to himself. And that's the work that he does. Let me read 21 to 23 for us as well. "And you, who once were alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he is now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death, in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him." Above reproach before him. I highlighted a few things for us. Because he turns and he makes this personal. "And you," of course, to the Colossians first, but I think it goes through time and space and hits us. "You who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds." Here's a little insight of creation. Did you know that you were made in the image and likeness of God? You were. That's what Genesis 1 tells us. But we kind of blew it as mankind. We kind of messed up the image. And we became alienated and hostile in mind because we disobeyed God when he gave us one simple rule. And we decided we didn't want to follow God. We wanted to be our own gods and rule our own lives. We were hostile then to God and became alienated, which causes these evil acts that we continually do in our world today. We're made in the image, but here is the good news. There was one who came who is the restorer of the image of God, and his name was Jesus. And he didn't just do it for the sake of the image of God, but to reconcile us back to him. Yes, we were supposed to do that. We chose not to listen. But listen to this language. Listen to the past tense here. "Who once were alienated, but has now reconciled." This reconciliation Jesus has already done. It's done. The work is done. His work on the cross is finished. He actually declared it on the cross when he said, "It is finished." This was the work he was doing. Bringing us back to God when we were hostile to him. And restoring that right relationship, that void within us that means we belong to him. Restoring that. To the point of this, that though we were evil and alienated, do you see where in the passage here, we become holy and blameless. It's this image of Jesus scooping us up and being brought to the Father, before the Father, and Jesus saying, "I got this one. This one's holy and blameless." And the Father's like, "Yeah, yeah, they are." And we didn't do anything. This is the work of Jesus as the reconciler, bringing us back to where we belong, to the Father. This next verse was interesting for me. In 23, it says, "If indeed you continue in the faith." You have this reconciliation if indeed you continue in the faith. Do you know where my mind went back to? That checklist. So what do I got to do then to continue the faith? Well, okay, I need to make sure I'm doing this, this, and this, and this. Right? I need to read my Bible every day. I need to pray 7 times a day. I need to make sure I'm going to church every Sunday and make sure I go to small group fellowship. I need to make sure I'm at BSF every week because Ilsa will be mad at me. And then just keep going, right? The list could just keep going. Make sure I'm tithing, right? All these things and that. If I do those, I need to have a really good experience with God, right? If I can't tell Ernest about my experience with God, it doesn't really matter. So if I get these check boxes, right? If I can continue in the faith, I don't know why my mind goes back there. But it's not what it's saying here. "If indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast." Here's what it is to be stable and steadfast. "Not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard." That's it. That's what this passage says. If I can simply remain in the hope of Jesus, that he's the one who has me, I'm good. Good. If I can say, "Jesus, you are my hope. You're the one that I run to. You're the one that I make preeminent in my life." If if I continually align myself with him in hope. That's what it takes to be reconciled with God. Then he does the rest of the work. He does all the work. I simply say, I hope in you, Jesus. And I remind myself of that every day. We all need reminding of that every single day. Paul recognized this in the Colossians, and it continues today. I began this series by saying we're wanderers. Just like the Colossians, they were wandering a bit. It's funny because Paul never even had met them at this point, but they were wandering, and Paul said, don't wander. Continue in the hope of the gospel. He's the one that brings you. Not the checklist, not the things of the world, not your previous life, but Jesus. The image of God, the firstborn of all creation, the reconciler. He truly is the best, the most powerful, and the most intimate one we know. Church, if I could encourage you today, don't shift from the hope of Jesus. Keep following him. He takes care of the small things. Nadine and I, on our honeymoon, right before this, sometime in the year, I bought a new car, right? It's like things you do as an adult, I guess, right? You buy a new car, you get a job, and you get married. And so I did those in some order. And then we were going to Tennessee. So we decided, let's drive to Tennessee. It was the cheapest option for us at the moment. And we were not very rich at that moment. And so we had little money, so we decided, let's just drive, take the money from the wedding, and we'll drive to Tennessee. And because why not? Let's go to the Smoky Mountains down there, which was awesome, by the way. But I had this new car, and I knew when I got there, the mileage says I needed to have an oil change, right? I needed to be serviced. And me being pretty legalistic, I needed to get my car done when I was there. So this is happy honeymoon, darling. But we're going to the Kia dealership, and we're going to go and get the oil change. So we went, and we did this, and we're sitting there, and this guy came over from the showroom, and I'm like, oh, great, here is a salesman. I'm like, he's going to be very surprised to find out that I'm not from this country and I could care less about buying a car right now. So he comes over and he asks who we are. It's like, oh, we're on our honeymoon. We're from Canada and all this. And he's just chatting at us up like a really good Southern man would at that moment. Salesman, of course. And then he left. And about 20 minutes later, comes back. I think 20 minutes. I don't know. I made that up. But he came back and he brought us our keys. And he said, don't worry. He's taken care of. Have a great honeymoon. And that was it. He covered our servicing of our car. And I was like, as a fairly moneyless, newly married person, was very thankful for that in that moment, right? The little things to the big things. When I have been in my most worst place emotionally, not being able to even move in my day, guess what? He holds all things together. One more story really quick is this, is when I remember as a kid, growing up in New Brunswick on the east side of Canada, and my family had very, very less than I did as a newly married couple, right? So little that there was times where we didn't really know what we were going to eat, right? The last jug of milk was kind of gone, and we're wondering what's happening, and time and time again, there'd be a knock at the door and some groceries. One or two bags to several bags for us. We had four kids, so we ate a lot. And every time, he is holding me together. I love this about Jesus. And I encourage you to look at your life and look over your life and wonder and ponder, how has he been holding me together? And some of us today probably need to ask a forward-thinking question of, how is he going to get me through this? Not how am I going to get through this, but I need to make him preeminent. So I bring him into the conversation and say, Jesus, how are you going to bring me through this? Because I don't know anymore. I don't know anymore. I don't know how I'm going to build that relationship with my child. I don't know how I'm going to get through this financially. I don't know how I'm going to get through this emotionally. I just don't get it. I don't know. But you do. I was made through you and for you, Jesus. And you hold me together. So, are we making him preeminent in our lives? Let me pause for a moment. Ernest is going to come and just lead us in one last song as we wrap things up here today. But I want to pray over you and let you sink into the word here of what it means for you to make him preeminent. So Jesus, we give you this space. We give you this space today, Lord, to do what you need to do, to help align our beings with your being. Because today we recognize you are supreme, you are preeminent, you are the firstborn. You are the reconciler, and we come to you today. So would you show us in these silent moments how I need to align myself, how I need you to hold on to me today and this week ahead. Let me give you a moment of silence to talk to him. O image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, come, reveal yet again, hold us yet again, and bring us back to you.